Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Well, I'm on my way. I don't know where I'm going. I'm on my way.
Good morning, Pensacola. I'm John Hutchinson, filling in for Andrew McKay. And that music means that it's time to talk to Julio Diaz. Julio is the host of Pensacola Movie Club on Facebook and also Let's Go Pensacola at 4 o'clock on Saturdays on News Radio 92.3. Good morning, Julio.
Hey, good morning.
Well, it's summertime, and there's lots of great movies coming out this summer, and I know you're looking at all of them. So tell us what's hot at the movies right now. What will you be watching this week?
Well, the big release this week is Quiet Place Day One. So this is the third Quiet Place movie, but it's a prequel to the previous two, and I don't believe involves any of the characters from the previous two. So this is, if you're familiar with these movies, they take place in a world where there's been an alien invasion by these aliens that are attracted to sound, and as soon as they hear a sound, they're on you and they kill you, basically. So this is what happened on the day that the aliens came to Earth, basically.
I saw the trailer, and I'm telling you, it's scary. I'm not a big fan of scary movies, but this one, if you like scary movies, this movie is scary. I mean, the aliens are really, really scary looking. So
yeah, and this takes place in New York City. So, you know, if you want to be in a very quiet place, that is not the place you want to be in. You know, there's a little thing at the beginning of the film that says New York basically constantly gives off a sound level of about 90 decibels, which is the same decibel level as a sustained scream. Now, I don't know if I buy that that's actually true. I was in New York fairly recently, and it didn't seem that loud to me. But, I mean, it's not quiet either.
Yeah.
The movie is – it's not so much scary as it is more like a survivalist adventure. I mean, yeah, you have a lot of, you know, jump scares, and, yeah, the creatures are creepy looking.
Yeah.
But it really is just about this one woman played by Lupita Nyong'o. Who's a great actress, and she is in a hospice when the movie starts. So she's, you know, not doing too well to begin with, but she's determined to survive these creatures, and because she is determined she's going to get her last slice of New York pizza before she goes, basically. So that's her quest, and she ends up teaming up with a young man played by Joseph Quinn, who everybody remembers as Eddie on Stranger Things. He was the breakout character of the most recent season of Stranger Things, getting ready to be Johnny Storm in the Fantastic Four movie next year. So, you know, kind of a hot young actor. And, you know, it's the two of them trying to survive and depending on each other to survive this this quiet world.
Yeah, should be great. Hey, what about Horizons? I think that movie debuts today. With Kevin Costner, and I think there's going to be a sequel out later.
There's going to be four of these. This is kind of a lot of people think this is Kevin Costner's folly, and the reviews are kind of bearing that out, unfortunately. So, you know, Costner walked away from, you know, very popular series Yellowstone that a lot of people loved, and a lot of people are not real happy with him about leaving to make these movies that kind of. Like if it was anybody else, this would be a streaming series or mini series or something like that. But Costner is determined to put them on the big screen, and he's put his own money up to make these movies, and you know, put his you know, entire fortune and property on the line because he believes in these films. Well, the reviews are not real great. The story is apparently very scattershot, but this is a Western epic. He is committed to making four of them. And there's a bunch of disparate stories being told around this town called Horizon. And it's just kind of apparently an incoherent and dated mess, according to the reviews. running around 45% on Rotten Tomatoes. So yeah. Not exactly the hope that Kevin Costner was hoping for here.
Yeah, it you know, the Westerns are making a comeback, and the Yellowstone was a hit, and so I guess they're thinking that this would be a hit too. Well, Julio, thank you. Good luck this week, and as as you watch A Quiet Place. We'll look forward to talking to you next Friday. Always a pleasure to talk to Julio Diaz. Thank you, Julio.
Thank you.
All right. Let's go to traffic on the fives with John.
That's right. I-10, I-110 flowing smoothly right now. Also, Highway 90, if you're headed to Pensacola on Highway 90. Seeing some delays through that construction zone, both north and southbound. Other than that, traffic's flowing smoothly. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives. The History of the Blue Angels is brought to you by Naval Aviation Museum Foundation.
Blue Angel season included several overseas performances. They flew shows in Bermuda, the Bahamas, Puerto Rico, and Jamaica. And in June, they departed Sherman Field en route to their first European tour. The Navy's precision flying team flew 10 public shows during this 27-day tour of Europe, which included Iceland, Finland, Denmark, the Netherlands, England, and France. One of the highlights of the tour was the Blue Angels' participation in the Paris International Aviation and Space Salon. Flight demonstration teams from all over the world, including the U.S. Air Force Thunderbirds, performed at this air show. But the Blue Angels were so phenomenal, they received the only spontaneous applause and standing ovation of the four-day event. The performance was so spectacular that upon their return to the United States, the team was recognized on the floor of Congress, where each pilot was presented with an air medal, and their leader, Commander Bob Aumach, received a Distinguished Flying Cross. The Distinguished Flying Cross is one of the highest medals given to Navy aviators. The next year, 1966, was the 20th anniversary of the Blue Angels, and the team was kept very busy flying air shows across the country. The Blue Angels gave 76 flight demonstrations that season, including a special show in July at the Grumman Aircraft Assembly Facility on Long Island, New York. In September, while performing before 100,000 spectators at the Canadian National Air Show in Toronto, Canada, tragedy struck. The accident occurred during the Knife Pass maneuver. This maneuver involves the two solo jets flying straight towards each other, then rolling perpendicular to the ground as they pass back-to-back, and then completing the roll on the other side. The two jets crossed successfully at an altitude of about 100 feet, when suddenly the number 5 jet dropped from the sky, struck a seawall, and crashed into Lake Ontario. The pilot, Lieutenant Commander Dick Oliver, was killed. The season was completed with the remaining 5 planes. I'll be back with more after this.
You were cleared for takeoff at the National Naval Aviation Museum. From thrilling hands-on experiences to historical insights, the National Naval Aviation Museum is where dreams take flight. Go Mach speed in a flight simulator. Let inspiration soar among the 150 beautifully restored aircraft. Escape to the giant screen theater and cap off your day at the flight deck store. Whether it's a day to dream, be inspired, or remember history, experience the National Naval Aviation Museum. Visit navalaviationmuseum.org to plan your visit today.
The Blue Angels take another international tour in the skies over Canada, Europe, North Africa, and the Middle East in the next edition of News Radio's History of the Blue Angels.
Costello's Butcher Shop and Deli, where you can meet up and wine all you want. At Costello's, they have all your summertime barbecue needs ready for pickup, from Wagyu tomahawks, Wagyu chuck steaks, to quarter pound colossal Wagyu hot dogs, brisket, pork butts, and so much more. And at Costello's, you will find all the best boar's head sandwich meats and cheeses, plus everything ready for charcuterie boards to chicken salad, and of course the best dessert pies, all at Costello's Butcher Shop and Deli. Fine wine and cheeses. Find them today at the corner of Lillian Highway and Fairfield Drive in Pensacola.
Whether you want to start your education or advance your career, Pensacola State College is the place for you. Join the 92% of PSC students who graduate loan-free and select from over 100 programs ranging from career certificates to baccalaureate degrees. In addition, Pensacola State has over 300 scholarships to choose from, including cybersecurity. Registration for fall semester is now open. Go to PensacolaState.edu. That's PensacolaState.edu.
Guy Benson, keeping you informed of the news every day at 2, right after Mark Lee Van Camp and Robbins on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Good morning, Pensacola. I'm John Hutchison, sitting in for Andrew McKay this morning. And we've asked you to send us texts about your reaction to the debates last night. We got another one in here. Somebody says, JB's Indian name is Paleface. So so send us your text, 850-437-1620, if you've got any kind of reaction to the debates last night. Right now, we've got a very special guest on the phone, Dr. Judy Bentz, former president at the University of West Florida, archaeologist who's done a great amount of work here in Northwest Florida. She's credited with finding the DeLuna ships, her and her staff, and many other things. But I think all of that is overshadowed by the fact that Dr. Bentz brought football to UWF. So good morning, Judy.
Good morning, John. How are you?
I am fine, and we're so glad to have you here. You know, I attended a presentation a few weeks ago where Judy was talking about early Floridians. Where did we come from? We didn't all come from New Jersey as a snowbird. It started way before that. So, Judy, tell us a little bit about that. How did we get to Northwest Florida, and what were our early beginnings like?
Well, the first thing we have to make clear is that we're talking about the first Floridians, the Native Americans.
Right.
Who lived here for thousands of years before the Europeans arrived. But the story of how people originally came into Northwest Florida is actually pretty complex and simple at the same time. The answer is they came from somewhere else. People did not arrive in the Americas until about, I would say, 15 to 20,000 years ago. The dates are iffy, but basically the biggest theory is they came from Asia. And it was during the ice ages when the climate was very different and plants and animals were different, and they basically walked. They followed their food source, which at the time was large mammals. They hunted elephants and mastodons and things like that. But they got here on foot in family units, probably small clans. And the earliest date we have for them in Florida is from Northwest Florida, over near Wakulla Springs, south of Tallahassee. And the date we have is 14,500 years ago.
Wow.
And that's the earliest date. And they spread southward from there.
And they were following the animal herds, but they were also looking for something else. What was that?
Water.
Water, yes.
Where the water table was way down, probably 100 feet down. And the reason they went to the Wakulla Springs area is because there are lots of natural springs there, underwater rivers, and they were like oases in a very dry environment. Sea level was about 400 feet lower than today.
Wow.
And so the water table dropped that much, too. These are, as you well know, very deep sinkholes and also flowing rivers through the limestone. And that's what they really were following, is they had all plants and animals and people have to have water. And so these watering holes is where we find all of that. We find the animals and we find the people.
What were their settlements like, Judy?
They were probably campsites. Mm-hmm. I know you go camping a lot, and I used to. People living with family groups, mom, pop, and the kids, the babies and the grandparents, probably then extended family units. They hunted and gathered. They didn't grow any plants yet. They gathered what was out there, and there's plenty to eat. But I would say they were in groups, say, I don't know, 20 to 40 people,
yeah.
And they were kind of on the move. They followed the plants and animals they needed through the seasons. They didn't stay in one place very long.
Yeah.
But they might have had like a base camp from which they radiated out. Maybe the older people lived there and the young babies were left there while the adults were out gathering food.
You know, it's always interesting to me what you can tell from the archaeological record that people leave behind. I often wondered what people are going to think 200 years from now when they look at our archaeological record. But the findings that tell us so much about these people and how they lived and how valuable that is for us today. And so I admire you for that work. And we're going to talk a little bit about the DeLuna ships in just a minute.
Sure.
I want to go to Traffic with the Fives right now with John Pickens.
That's right. No accidents to let you know about I-10, I-110 flowing very smoothly. I'm seeing some delays right now on Highway 29 right around Burgess Road. The northbound side is backed up. Southbound, just a little bit of a delay is happening there. Other than that, traffic is flowing smoothly. I'm John Pickens with your Traffic on the Fives.
Thank you, Johnny. We're back with Dr. Bentz, and we're talking about early Floridians, early Pensacola. And there was a miraculous discovery made a few years ago when Judy and her staff found the DeLuna ships, the first settlement in the New World, not just in Florida. Sorry, San Augustine, was here in Pensacola by DeLuna and his crew. And Judy and her folks have found the ships. They're over off of the mouth of Bayou Tahar. Judy, I always said they landed there because of Jerry's Drive-In. They wanted to be able to get a good cheeseburger. So I know there's been some new information about the third DeLuna ship, I believe. So tell us about that whole exploration and where that is.
Well, I never, ever thought that we would be able to find Luna ships, but an archaeologist named Roger Smith back in the early 90s was a shipwreck archaeologist and was a state underwater archaeologist, and he set out to find them, and by gosh, he did. In shallow water, they're in a sandbar right off the mouth of Bayou Tahar, as you said, and there was a big hurricane in 1559, 5 weeks after they arrived, 1,500 people, 13 ships, a big fleet, and six of them were sunk in the bay. One was thrown up on land, but six of them are there. Now, they weren't anchored there, but that's where we found the shipwrecks. And so it was, it's just amazing. I mean, they're underwater metal detectors and sonar and profilers, but that they use to detect because the ships are buried. There's nothing showing on the bay floor. There's no litter. There's no mass. There's no whatever. And the reason that the fact that they are buried is the reason that they are preserved. But they're in about 12 feet of water. And the first one was found. There was just a tiny little. There was a big magnetic reading, and they went down and dived on it, and brushed the sand away, and they found the tip of that anchor. Wow. That anchor is 10 feet tall.
Wow.
And that number one shipwreck is with the Vice flagship. And the second one that we found a few years later was the actual flagship called the El Jesus. Mm. And then of all things, after we found the settlement over in East Pensacola Heights, we found the third one. Now, we don't know too much about that third one, but it's shallow. It's only in about 8 feet of water. And we're working on it right now. And the word is that they've been finding parts of the ship, of course. We think this ship might have broken up, and big parts of this is just a big part of it. But that's one of the questions they're finding out now. But they're finding mercury on it, which they hope to use to work silver ore when they found it. Lots of ceramics, lots of crossbow tips. And so we're even might have found maybe a coin or two, but they're in electrolysis right now. We don't quite know what they are, but it's a very rich site like the others are.
That is very exciting, Judy. To me, it's just amazing that for 450 years in 8 feet of water off the mouth of one of the busiest bayous we have in Northwest Florida, those ships have just been sitting there. And all that history has been sitting there. And so hats off to you and the other folks who found these ships. I find it fascinating to be able to think about that they were right there. The first settlement by Europeans in America, right here in Pensacola. I tell people Pensacola has more history than anybody else. And we should celebrate that, and we should research that. And hats off to you and your folks for the great job that you're continuing to do. To tell us about our past and to tell us where we came from, because I think that is so valuable in terms of where we're going. Judy Bentz.
It helps gives us a perspective.
Yeah, it certainly does. So I thank you for all the work you're doing. And if you don't know, Judy's doing some great woodwork now, too. So if you need some woodwork done, she can do that. She is a woman of many, many talents. And we celebrate you here in Pensacola for all you did for UWF and for the football. The new information about the new ship is very exciting. We look forward to hearing more about that as that continues. Okay. Judy, thank you.
John.
We'll see you soon.
It's been my pleasure.
Yes. Bye-bye. We're going to go to John with Traffic on the Fives.
Let's head over to David Wayne in the newsroom.
All right. Well, California's high-speed rail project hitting a big milestone. The final segment waiting for the green light between Los Angeles and San Francisco got it yesterday. That means the entire 463-mile route is now at least environmentally, cleared for construction. Millions of Americans hitting the airports today to travel ahead of the 4th of July. The TSA says they're expecting over 32 million people to be going through airports between now and Monday, July 8th. They say today is the peak day for holiday flights. Over 3 million passengers expected nationwide. We are still watching the Supreme Court, expecting some major rulings today. One of the biggest remaining cases, of course, involving presidential immunity. That could impact some of former President Trump's pending cases, including alleged attempts to overturn the election in 2020. We'll have more with your local news at 8:30. You're in like a minute. I don't know. Sometime very soon.
Fox News. I'm Chris Foster. Trump lied a lot and Biden's too old. That's the summary of last night's CNN debate from some top Democrats saying President Biden should maybe step aside for a new nominee. He was so weak. There were policy disagreements and personal attacks.
We got to take a look at what I was left when I became president. What Mr. Trump left me. We had an economy that was in free fall. The pandemic was so badly handled. Many people were dying. All he said was, it's not that serious. Just inject a little bleach into your arm. You'll be all right.
The only jobs he created are for illegal immigrants and bounce back jobs, a bounce back from the COVID. He has not done a good job. He's done a poor job, and inflation's killing our country. It is absolutely killing us.
They disagreed on abortion, foreign policy, and who's a better golfer. President Biden campaigns in Raleigh, North Carolina today. Former President Trump in Chesapeake, Virginia. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning. It is 8:31. News Radio Pensacola. I'm David Wayne. Right now, 78 degrees. Mostly cloudy this morning. Officials are working on a gas leak today. Pensacola Energy said a contractor hit a gas supply line yesterday on Fairchild Street. They did evacuate one house yesterday. Pensacola Energy right now still working on repairs there. An illegal immigrant from Guatemala accused of sexual battery on an underage girl. This was in Okaloosa County. The sheriff's office said yesterday 24-year-old Jose Chan was arrested. The alleged victim was 14. She said the incident happened a little over a year ago. ICE has been notified. Exponential growth. That's what UWF has been seeing, according to the dean of the College of Science and Engineering.
Our enrollment is growing very rapidly. Last year, we hit 10,000 applicants to UWF. This year, we beat that record at 10,500. Now, whether we have the infrastructure or the space to grow beyond that, that is a discussion that we are having, is what is too big.
That's Dr. Muhammad Kabu, and he says it's a good problem to have at UWF. He says this fall they've got a record number of students enrolled to start in the fall, and the university is currently working to hire enough faculty to meet that demand. But he tells Channel 3 that typically the university is the first choice of most high-quality applicants. UWF currently has about 18 open faculty positions for this year. Governor Ron DeSantis says the state's not getting its fair share of federal funding from President Biden's infrastructure plan. He says it's too focused on ideological issues such as diversity, equity, and inclusion.
$1 billion transportation project that he said would combat racist roads. And I'm thinking, like, everyone can drive our roads. I don't know where you're getting that.
And the governor said he won't accept strings such as embracing DEI to get that federal funding. FDOT launching a new website recently, which denounces the federal infrastructure plan. That website's roadsarenotforpolitics.com. The White House does say that they've sent more than $7 billion to the state for road improvements, though. And it looks like there is a tropical wave in the eastern Atlantic with a good chance of developing this week. That's expected to hit the southeastern Caribbean by the end of the weekend. Once it gets closer, hurricane hunters will be flying into the storm to get a better look.
There is some Saharan dust out there right now. And, that may help to offset development. But right now, all the other factors do look favorable.
That is Dr. Richard Pasch from the National Hurricane Center. He says that storm has about an 80% chance of developing over the weekend. And Pharmacy chain Walgreens planning to close up about a quarter of its underperforming stores across the nation. They're not the only pharmacy chain that's had its struggles lately.
Rite Aid, which filed for bankruptcy last year, has closed more than 500 stores. And in 2021, CVS said it would close 900 branches across 3 years.
Sally Peterson there. Walgreens hasn't specified how many stores are on the list for a possible closure, but they say it'll be a meaningful amount. Walgreens has 9,000 stores across the U.S. and 14 in Escambia and Santa Rosa counties. 8:35 right now. John's got a look at our traffic on the fives.
That's right. Not seeing any accidents right now. I-10, I-110 flowing very smoothly. But if you're on Palafox Street between Maxwell and Lakeview, you're going to see some delays in the north and southbound lanes. That's a look at your traffic. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thank you very much, John. And right now, it is 8:35. Let's get a look at our Channel 3 weather forecast.
We will have scattered showers and thunderstorms today. 70% chance of rain for today. High near 89 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 78. For Saturday, 50% chance of rain. High near 90 degrees. Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 78 degrees. For Sunday, 60% chance of rain with a high near 92. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. We've got 77 and cloudy in Pensacola, 76 in Gulf Breeze, 79 in Milton. Your money now. This morning, markets are up. The Dow's up 189, 74 at 39,353.80. S&P 500 up 1374 at 54,97.40. NASDAQ up 1463 at 17,872.33. 10-year bond rate down just a bit at 4.26%. Gold price is up 730. Make that 740 now at 23.44. And silver prices are up 56 cents this morning at 29.82. Bitcoin up 44 bucks at 61,480.98 this morning. And looks like not a big change in the rest of the crypto market today. The NFL has been ordered to pay almost $5 billion in damages after being ruled to have violated antitrust laws. A jury in U.S. District Court found that the league conspired with DirecTV and other network partners to increase the price of NFL Sunday Ticket from 2011 to 2022. The NFL says they plan to appeal that verdict. U.S. auto sales are expected to slow down during the second half of the year. According to Cox Automotive, vehicle inventory levels have been growing and incentives are increasing. Experts believe the second half of the year is going to be a tough one for automakers due to growing industry uncertainty and uncertainty around the economy, interest rates, and the presidential election as well. And the typical new home built in the U.S. today is getting smaller. It's markedly smaller than those built just a decade ago, according to the National Association of Home Builders. The typical buyer today wants a home that's just over 2,000 square feet. New homes have been shrinking since 2015, when the average home size peaked at 2,600 square feet. It is 8:38, your next news at 9, breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne for News Radio Pensacola, FM 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
Severe weather can strike at any time.
At any time.
New tornado warning just in effect now for Escambia and Santa Rosa counties.
At any time.
Very, very heavy rain here at the radio station. As a matter of fact, I believe our building is even out of power right now.
When you need to know.
So this is the warned area. Now a tornado warning in effect until 2:03.
Severe weather can strike at any time.
When you need to know.
News Radio Pensacola.
Informative, local, dependable.
I said a hip hop, the hip hop, you don't stop. Rap.
I will definitely call you back later then.
Come on, wrap it up.
Big sharp it up.
Okay, you know what? Wrap up the circle thing. Come on.
Mr. Parker, wrap it up, please.
Okay.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.
Wrap it up.
Well, good morning. I'm John Hutchinson, sitting in for Andrew McKay, and this is The Wrap. It's Friday, so that means we're going to have some special guests in the studio to talk about a lot of different things this morning. And this morning, we've got two great guests. We've got Buzz Ritchie, Buzz represented us in the Florida House from 1992, I believe, to 1998?
88.
88, okay. 88 to 98.
Yes.
All right, okay. Former CEO, I think, of Coast Community Bank and
yes.
involved in some other banks, and Director of Development at Autism Pensacola. So Buzz has been around Pensacola a long time. Got some great interest in terms of where we're going and what we're doing. Also, Andrea Krieger, she's the executive director of the Pensacola State College Foundation. I didn't say PJC.
You're alone in that.
The PSC Foundation. Of course, we know Andrea, too, former director of the United Way here in Pensacola. Been involved in the philanthropic effort here for years and years and years, and has just done a super job. So both of you guys have been involved in fundraising, Buzz and Andrea, and so I wanted to, the first question I wanted to ask you guys was, how would you rate the philanthropic mood of Northwest Florida? How generous are our people and how important is that? Buzz, we'll start with you.
I think the vote on the Pensacola Children's Trust is proof, outstanding proof. Now, people feel they're overtaxed. They don't have a direct say with the Children's Trust, but they had a say in doing more for children, and they stood up. They do votes that continue school, additional taxes for school construction. To me, it is amazing, and it goes well beyond that. But I think the most telling answer is the vote, the very positive vote.
Yeah.
We taxed ourselves voluntarily for the Children's Trust. I think it's the best answer I have right now.
Yeah. Andrew, would you agree?
Yeah, I would. If you're talking a scale of 1 to 10, I think here in Northwest Florida, we're probably a 12.
Yeah.
We are just really generous. I think after doing a capital campaign very successfully in a recession at Ronald House and just having folks from all across Northwest Florida support that, doing a renovation there, doing a renovation at United Way while I was there, just completing a capital campaign at the college that was $11 million, that raised $13 million. Yeah. There's just people own this community. Mm-hmm. They don't just say it, they get engaged and they do it, and there's a spirit of philanthropy that is very strong.
I've seen the same thing. I've done some fundraising for some organizations, and I've always just been amazed that there are some folks who just say, how much do you want? and you just don't run into that in a lot of different communities. And we can look at, the YMCA. We can look at UWF. We can look at Pensacola State College. We can look at MANA. We can look at all these different organizations and the great success they've had in fundraising, not getting the money from the government, but getting the money from individuals in our community who want to see us succeed. And I think that's so important, to be part of the community. And it doesn't matter if it's $5 or $5 million. It's important that you invest in the community. And I agree with both of you, but I wanted to take your temperature on that because I think we have very generous people here at all levels. And I think that's very important. The debate last night, we've been taking text all morning on people's reaction to that. I'm going to read a couple of these real quick, and then I'm going to get your reaction. This one says, I still would love to see Biden and Trump play golf. Okay. That was at the end last night. Somebody else says, we need to replace Biden with Kennedy as the Democratic candidate. Okay. And then the last one says, Biden sunk the Democrats' 2024 hope. So I don't know about all that, and I don't know if there's winners and losers in all this. Sometimes I think the American people is the real loser in this. When I look at both of those candidates, I say, is this what we got? This is our choice. But what are y'all's thoughts on that? Andrew, we'll start with you.
I would just say, I've gotten to the point where I'm numb to all of it. I'm so tired over the last 3 years, 2 years especially, of the just the – there's no talk about what is important to the average Joe, the average citizen. It's all about where you can get a point. And there's a book called Crucial Conversations, and it's about when you don't have dialogue, when you're really just waiting to score the point on the board.
Yeah.
And that's what I would equate this to. But I think I was struck by looking at the screen and just seeing a blank. There was just a blankness there with Joe Biden. I'm not saying there's good or bad either side, but I was a little shocked by that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm just over it. It's not like they're conversing about what a solution is for the American people or the country. It's about who can score the point always. Yeah. And I'm done, yeah. And the, honestly.
And the name calling to me is very bothersome, too.
It's very bothersome.
I said earlier, the only name we ought to call each other is American citizen. That's who we are. Yep. We're all in this together. And when our leaders fight like that, it leads to everybody else fighting like that. And I think that's the real shame. That was the debate last night was just a mud puddle fight. And I'm tired of all that, too, and I think most of the Americans are.
Yeah.
Buzz, we're going to get your reaction in just a minute, but let's go to John with traffic on the fives.
Thank you very much. We're seeing I-10, I-110 flowing very smoothly right now. If you are on Highway 90 headed southbound to Pensacola, you're going to see some delays through that construction zone southbound there. And watch your speed through that area also. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thank you, John. I'm back with two of my favorite people, Buzz Ritchie and Andrea Krieger, and we're having the wrap, general conversation about things going on. We're talking about the debates last night. Buzz, give us your general reaction.
Well, I'm not going to give my reaction per se, but my reaction to what I've read this morning is so many people are saying it doesn't matter what happened last night. Our country is in two halves. We are not the United States of America. We're two different countries almost spread across 50 states. I don't know the names I saw used, but if Donald Duck and Minnie Mouse ran against each other and had that same debate, it wouldn't have changed one mind.
Yeah. Yeah.
Going in and coming out, everybody's going to vote for the person they thought about ahead of time. There's very few swing votes, I'm told. I have to believe that's true from what I sense. And I don't know. I blame it on the money that's in the game these days.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And why do we in the great country have two almost octogenarians almost foolishly battling it out for the leadership of the most powerful country in the world? I don't know how you change it. I told somebody that when I was in the legislature, somebody tried to pass a law that you couldn't drive over the age of 70. We don't want to get into age-centric legislation, but maybe we shouldn't let somebody be president after a certain age, or you get them a cognitive test and get them certified as capable. It's sad. It's just sad to me.
Great point.
And I've always said, is this the best we can do?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. These are the two best people we have to lead our great nation at a critical time. We've got two wars going on. We've got economic issues. We've got immigration issues. We've got all these issues to deal with. And we're watching two old guys up there call each other names.
Yeah,
exactly.
I think the American people are fed up with that. And people I talk to are. But as Bud says, I don't know how you change that. Somebody had suggested get rid of the parties. You don't have parties. Everybody just runs, you know, as they are. I don't know if that works or how you get there. Because
I think money would still interrupt that, though, John.
Money would still interrupt that, yeah. Yeah, you're probably right. So I don't know where it's going to go. I'm just concerned about our nation. And I'm concerned that people, us, are getting pulled into that in terms of putting labels on each other and calling each other names and not respecting the fact that we're all American citizens. We all go up or down together. And so we need to start acting like that.
I've had a lot of friends use the term Andrea just used. They're numb.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a bad thing, too. So, I mean, they're going to drop out and not vote. I'm talking on both sides. Numb. Just too much of this, too much social media.
Yeah.
Anyway,
it's the mud puddle.
We talk all day about this.
Yeah, it's the mud puddle value of it. That's exactly right. You know, even my dad was looking forward to watching this debate. And I think my dad was looking forward to watching it to see who won which hits. I mean, literally.
Yeah.
I honestly believe that. And I'm so over it. There are issues like you talk about, John, and this is not the way we solve them.
Yeah.
We've got to get in it together, and we're just not there. And Lord help, it does not need to be another plane hitting a tower that brings us all back together.
Thank you. Yeah, you're exactly right. So I wonder sometimes, do we get what we deserve in terms of we voted these people into office, we being everybody, and so... I think it means that we probably need to spend a little more time thinking about who we vote for and why we vote for them. It's not all flash. It needs to be substance. It needs to be people who are concerned about our future, people we can trust, and all those kinds of things ought to go into who you vote for. And just because I voted for Jimmy Carter doesn't mean I'm going to vote for every Democrat after that. And we get into that mode, too. I'm a Democrat. I'm a Republican. No, you're not. You're an American. Mm-hmm. And you have different candidates running for different offices. And I vote across the ticket. It doesn't matter to me. But most people don't. And I think that's part of the issue, too. Social media has made it so much more amplified in terms of sniping at each other. So I think we're at a crossroads, and this election is kind of we getting what we deserve, maybe. Anyhow. Well, we could talk about that for a long time, and there's plenty of talking heads out there who are going to analyze this upwards and downwards and backwards and forwards. So let's change subjects real quick. I quoted a statistic earlier this morning that only 44% of third graders in Escambia County could pass their reading test. Your reaction to that, Buzz?
Well, probably I'll start with Andrea, because with United Way, I remember when I was the board chair with her, and we had a group of dedicated people. We tried things. We tried a special program. Andrea, what was that school? The
CAYs. Yeah. It's still there, and they're talking about doing another one now, too.
We did some things. One thing I found that I've kept in my brain is that you find yourself wanting to work with a second grade class, let's say. We're going to get them ready in a year. The mobility in this bottom quintile or quartile is phenomenal. So you start off with a group of students. They may move three or four times before they get to that third grade test. I think the Children's Trust may have an ability to impact this, but we've been working on this a long, long time, and I don't think we've really moved the needle.
No, it seems like it's stuck. It's absolutely stuck. And I will tell you that what happens, it seems like, is, and we recently had a summit on this that, well, the community did at the college about voluntary pre-K, about early childhood education, and about the need for educators. Because here's part of the problem. You have folks who are trying to fix this before they actually get into the school system or at the early years. But then you want to pay somebody who is sitting in a room with these children at $10 an hour. You know, now we're working up with minimum wage, but then they can't hire enough teachers, and you don't get the quality teacher that you need that's actually training these kids pre-K, because they're not learning how to read at home. They're not learning their alphabet. They're showing up not knowing how to hold scissors. But if we don't value the professional in that classroom who's going to take those steps when our families don't have the ability to because they're working, or don't have the understanding to do it themselves because they came through that same cycle, then we've got a problem. We got to fix that whole mechanism of how we value the role of the educators who are there with them, even through third grade.
Yeah. And I don't know how, John, we handle the disproportionate percentage of children who are in that category who don't have both parents at home.
Yes.
Helping with homework. What are they doing this summer? Are they totally falling even further behind when they're not in a classroom? There's a large disproportionate number of income and lack of both parents in the household that can really make, hopefully, but we've been fighting this for, Andrew, 30 years at least.
Sure.
The needle's not moving.
Nope.
Yeah, our poverty rate is going up. It's like at 14%, and I think there is a correlation between that in terms of having the resources to help at home and to make sure that youngster starts as a good start. If you can't read when you're in the third grade, or if you're having trouble reading in your third grade, you don't correct that person's going to be behind in the fourth grade, the fifth grade, the sixth grade,
We saw studies about this. That third grade boy, by the time he gets in the fifth grade or sixth, he can't read. He's going to give up, and he's going to find something else he's good at, and he's not going to be ridiculed in the classroom.
Nope.
So he just shuts the book up and shuts his mouth up.
Right. And there, we have Achieve Escambia still trying to work with those collaborative circles. Yes. And there, there's been so many bumps because everybody thought, okay, Achieve Escambia is helping with these issues. And then we have ECT. So now we stop with this over here. Well, you still have to have all of the business partners in the community coming to the table to help provide the solution. It's not going to be provided by money. It's not just money going to provide.
Thank you. I think we get into that trap sometimes. We just need to pour more money into it. No, we need to pour more attention into it. Mm-hmm. And the business community has a vested interest in this. These are your employees.
Sure.
10 years down the road. These are the people who are going to be showing up wanting to come to work for you. If they can't read or they have trouble reading or they've not had a great successful academic career, they don't know how to react in the world, then it's going to hurt your business. And I think we've already seen some of that.
Sure.
Before you shift gears on this, let's give a shout out to some programs Big Brother, Big Sister.
Oh, they're doing a phenomenal job.
Huge difference. Yes. If we had 10,000 more Big Brothers and Big Sisters, maybe we would start to move the needle.
I think you're right.
Right. Yeah, they're doing a fabulous job. And Ruthie Noel, who's the new ED over at Achieve Escambia, is sharp.
Exactly.
She is very sharp. And there's great work happening. Ready Kids, Christy Craig at Ready Kids. Even our school district has some programs.
Yeah. Great conversation. We're going to go to John with Traffic on the Fives right now, and we'll continue this.
That's right. I-10, I-110 flowing very smoothly right now. If you're headed again from Pace to Pensacola on Highway 90, just know that there's construction zone there, and we're seeing some slower traffic. Just be aware of that. Other than that, everything looks good. I'm John Pickens with your Traffic on the Fives.
Thank you, John. We're here with The Wrap, and I've got Buzz Ritchie and Andrea Krieger here, and we've already solved four or five big problems in Northwest Florida. We've only got a couple more to go, so I appreciate y'all coming in and being part of our conversation this morning. Hey, we have had four shootings in the last month in Escambia County. Last week involved more than 40 rounds being fired. It involved people jumping off bridges and dogs jumping off bridges and searches and, unfortunately, fatalities. A woman over 70 years old was shot. I worry about our community when I see we're having all these shootings. And listen, there's no better sheriff's department, there's no better police department than we have here in Escambia County and in Pensacola. Chip Simmons and his folks just do a phenomenal job. But they are being challenged and they are being taxed by this. And this is Pensacola, and to have four shootings in 1 month is not acceptable in my mind. So, Andrew, what do you think about this?
I'm going to say it again because it's not just our community. There is a mentality, it seems like, in our country right now that doing bad things are okay, and there is visibility for doing bad things. And when you add to that some of the economic pressures that some of these families are having and some of these individuals who have mental health issues, you've got a recipe for disaster. And mental health is a serious issue. When I recently, probably a couple of years ago, was in a meeting where they were talking about Baker Acting kindergartners.
Oh my goodness.
And that, so if we're talking, all that we've just talked about, it all starts there, and then it just keeps being blown out of proportion when you have a culture in our country that it's okay to be mean to each other, to snipe at each other, to be nasty, to get your way. You're not going to have consequences for what you do. Yeah. You got to put the consequences back, and it can't just, one little community can't do it by ourselves.
Buzz, your thoughts?
Well, I've heard our sheriff saying, I agree, great person, great department, but the vast percentage of these shootings are involving drugs of some type.
Yes.
Now, this is bad stuff that most people my age don't understand. But and I think the mental health gap is huge, and we don't wait until they're 22 and they've started legally drinking. No, we got to get down to kids in middle schools and high schools, and some of these shooters and victims are very young people too, which is sheriff's doing all they can. I'm positive.
Yeah, but and Eric Randall's doing the same thing. I heard him talking about the same issue. The issue with drugs in our community is unbelievable. And we just, you see the pretty parades, we watch the Blue Angels fly, we see some of the great things in our community, and it's easy to focus on that instead of some of the painful things to look at.
Yeah, and I wonder, we talked about the third grade reading scores. I wonder if there's a correlation between I can't get a job I can sell drugs, I can do this over here. There's no background check to be involved in criminal activity, I wonder if that contributes to it as well. But we can't solve all the problems, but I do appreciate.
Do we have one we can solve before we get off?
Let us solve one.
+2 +3.
The marijuana referendum, for it or against it?
I'm not waffling on you. I really don't know exactly how far it goes and what it says. I was very supportive of the medicinal marijuana, but I'm not too sure where this one goes, and I'm going to hold back until I literally
I'm
read
saying
it.
No.
Andrea says no. Okay, there you go. Well, you'll have your chance to vote on that.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, listen, this has been a great morning. I appreciate Buzz and Andrea coming in and joining us for the wrap. And thank you. Andrew McKay will be back Monday. And I've enjoyed hosting the morning show. Have a great weekend. Have a great 4th of July. Have a great New Angel show. Thank you.